Listening Library presents Waves by Sharon Dogar. Read for you by James Clamp. Prologue. Our vacation house is white. You can tell it's a 1930s seaside house because it looks just like a ship that somehow strayed onto land. Our house is right next to the beach, but on a hill, so that when you look down, you feel as though the whole world spread out beneath you, just waiting for something to happen. We come here every summer. It feels like always, forever. "You were here as a bump," says Mum, if I ask her when I first came. "As a twinkle," Dad smiles. I hope I'll come here with my children's children, if I'm lucky enough to live that long. In the kitchen, there are photos of the whole Didden family clan. Mum's mum, Dad, Charlie, me, and Sarah. And that's just on our bit of the wall. Spread out all around the kitchen walls are the other faces. Faces of all the families who stay here. Cousins, aunts, uncles. There are some I don't even know or recognize. One of the weird things about a house like this is that we all think it's ours. But really, it doesn't belong to anyone. Or perhaps it belongs to everyone. I'm not sure. In the photos, you can see us all growing. "Hair gets shorter, legs get longer," says Mum. And then she touches us, a soft, light stroke, as though we were wood and she's touching us for luck. Sometimes I wish the photos weren't there at all. And then I look at my sister Charlie on the wall. There are lots of photos of Charlie. There's the Charlie I never knew, age one. She's fat, with red fluff on her head. Charlie, age three, stares at the camera, with eyes that look so like mine. I'm in the picture too, but I haven't got my grown-up eyes yet. Charlie's smiling, but I can see her little fist squeezing my fat baby arm, and I can imagine feeling the pain of it. I don't think Charlie liked me being born at all. In that photo, our eyes are green. They dazzle. "Look at me," they shout. "Look at me! Not that scrappy little thing on the floor." Right next to that, surprise, surprise, is another photo of Charlie, age four. But it is a surprise, because in this photo, she's standing in a rock pool, and her eyes aren't green at all anymore. They're blue as the sky she's staring up at. "Chameleon eyes," says Mum, smiling. "The change with the weather." It's true, too. Her eyes really do change colour. Mine do, too. Underneath, though, I think her eyes are grey, a nothing colour, a take-on-anything colour. Fickle. With each photo, Charlie's eyes just get bigger and bigger, and she grows slimmer and taller, until the last photo. I look at it. I don't have to see it for real, because it's the picture I always have of her in my head. In my mind's eye, where our eyes aren't the same color at all. Charlie is beautiful, and I can tell you that was a surprise. The real Charlie was just Charlie. Irritating, often. Kind, rarely. Fun, sometimes. But mostly, just a pain. But the photo, Charlie, is beautiful. Just like the sun going down on the beach behind her. It was Dad who took that last photo. I remember it. "Just look at that child's hair in the light," Mum said. And we all looked up, each one of us, all hoping that it was us she meant. But this time, it was Charlie. The sun does look like it's caught in her hair. It glitters in gold and red as it falls across her face. She's looking into a tin bucket, full of that day's catch. "Come on, Charlie," said Dad. "To the rock." Every year, Dad took a photo. And ever since she was five, all of Charlie's photos were taken on the same rock. A huge rock, buried beneath the sea, and only uncovered by the tide. Year by year, she gets higher and higher up the rock, until that year, last year, she's finally made it to the very top. Charlie, 15 years old, the photo says. She doesn't look too steady, if you ask me. There's not much rock to balance on up there. I know. I climbed it early the very next day, as though I might be able to see her from up there. Spot her somewhere on the wide, empty, early morning beach. The way Mum's never really stopped trying to do. It's a hard climb to the top of that rock. But she's standing. That's Charlie for you. Standing straight up into the middle of the air. And you can see that she's laughing. Charlie's laugh. The one that says, "I've done it, look at me, I've done it." I used to hate that laugh. I won't look, I'd think. And then she'd call out, "Hal, look at me, Hal." and I'd pretend not to hear. And then when I did look, there she was. Always at the top, always there, where I wanted to be, and waiting for me to be happy about it. Well, I'm waiting for you now, Charlie. We're all waiting now. The photo. Her hair is as red as the sun, as gold. It flies right up into the air from her tipped sideways head. It's as long as it ever got, just touching the elbow of her right arm. It looks as though her hair is just about to break free of her body and fly away toward the dipping sun. The flipped-up ends of it are golden, the scalp of it a deep, deep red. It's a burning picture. It hurts me just to look at it. Sometimes when I'm alone in the kitchen with Charlie's picture, I feel my head turning toward it, turning as though it's no longer mine, and I close my eyes, not wanting to see. But she's there, just the same, there, behind my eyelids. "Hal, look at me, Hal," she cries, and she's dancing, a little black demon of a silhouette on the rock, surrounded by red globes of light. And she's alive, so alive that even the sun wants a piece of her, and that's what hurts most of all, that someone so alive could possibly be dying. And worse, that as she dies, we all seem to be dying too. Somehow. Especially Mum. Sometimes I think the sea that nearly killed her loved her so much that it didn't want to give her back. Other times I just hate Charlie for ever existing in the first place. Part 1. The Family. North Oxford, England. Now.
"How can we?"
Mum's voice comes up through the nightlit window and into my room. This is always how it ends, every night for weeks, in Mum's wail of despair.
"How can we?"
Dad's voice comes back at her in a low, deep, wordless mumble. God, it's hot. I imagine I could open the window and be in Cornwall, hearing the sea, feeling the cool breeze fresh from the waves. It's so sticky and hot here. The gnats dance around the candle flame on the garden table. Mum and Dad stop talking suddenly and look up. "It's late, Hal," says Dad. "Yeah," I shout back. They wave and drop their voices. The lights at the end of the garden flicker and go out. I watch as the pale moon appears and floats on the black river. Mum blows out the candles, and the smoky smell of wax drifts up to my window. It's hot.
"Night, Hal,"
whispers Mum. And the garden falls still and silent. I look up at the sky. It's never truly dark here. In Cornwall, the sky is so deep and black and inky that it's just stuffed full of stars, all racing around the moon. Some nights there are so many that it feels as though some are closer to the earth than others. 3D stars.
"How can we, John?"
Her voice comes up through the floor this time. It's so full of despair that I wonder why the moon doesn't drop an inch to hear her better. But it doesn't. I wonder if they'll ever stop. I wonder if they'll ever ask me what I think. I wonder where my sister Charlie really is, and if she'll ever wake up. But most of all, I just wonder if we're going back to Cornwall for the summer. "We have to, Millie." Dad's voice is just as definite as hers, just as despairing.
"We can't! I can't!"
The long silence tells me that she's crying quiet tears, imagining that I can't hear them, can't see them anyway, in my mind's eye, where she never seems to stop crying. "What about Hal and Sarah?" he asks. "They can't stay stuck in Oxford all summer." Mum mutters something. I think I hear my name, and then silence. I can hear my heart thumping. And then Dad again, weary now. "Right, I'll take them. You stay here with Charlie." More silence. "Can you manage that, love?" His voice is still gentle, but it's all sad and soft and definite, too. It's like Charlie being half dead has sort of broken their voices up, so that they've got more ways of telling each other things, more ways of meaning things, only just not in words. I try to listen, to hear between the gaps. There are so many now. Gaps, I mean.
"No,"
says Mum slowly, after an age of silence.
"No, John, you're right. We need, no, they need, to be..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?